I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, in an interview with our friend Jonathan Cho, Border Czar Tom Homan says he won't be bullied by Antifa.
I'm going to Portland and I'm going to Seattle.
Plus, it's looking very likely that just 6 months into his job as Pierce County executive, Ryan Mello probably violated state laws in his handling of a Pride event. And child drug deaths are way up in Washington state. So what will Democrats do about it? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. And while you're there, check out our latest merch that just dropped. Again, UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I do want to talk about the August primary election. If you're watching from another state, I don't know, maybe you have an August primary as well, but I think it fits into this overall theme we have on this show of, look, it's not like Republican versus Democrat all the time. Sometimes it's a D on D race, and as a Republican, you still need to get involved in it because we need to start shifting states like Washington just ever so slightly back towards sanity. And yes, Republicans, sometimes that means voting for a Democrat. Sometimes it even means voting for a Democrat who's a little bit cuckoo sometimes, because they're the less cuckoo of the two options. So we'll get into that coming up. First, a few updates. Our friend Jonathan Cho getting a sit down, I think he was in Florida, with Border Czar Tom Homan. I just had to play a couple clips from it today. I'm still waiting for Tom Homan to come to Portland. He already promised to come to Portland. He hasn't come yet. But now he says he's coming to Seattle, too. So I don't know how long it'll take. But here's a clip of his interview with Jonathan Cho.
Antifa and all the rest of those assholes are not going to bully me. I'm going to Portland and I'm going to Seattle, just like I went to Chicago, like I went to New York. But when I go to Portland and Seattle, it's going to put that, elevate that issue up here. And plus, I want to send a message to men and women of ICE that, hey, I got you six. I know it's tough out here, but we're not forgetting about it. We're going to give you all the resources you need.
Do you have those Portland or Seattle visits set yet? Do you have the dates for those?
It's coming. I don't have the exact date, but I talked to my chief of staff today and she'll be working on it. I will be in Portland. I will be in Seattle. And you can count on it. Matter of fact, we're going double down, triple down.
Love it. We want you here. I want you next to me in studio, Tom Homan, talking about what's been happening. But again, I think there's these, you know, nationally, certainly Democrats are pushing back about what the Trump administration is doing in actually enforcing our immigration laws. But there is this added element in places like L.A., I mean, all up and down the West Coast, L.A., Portland, Seattle, where there is this violent element pushing back against. It's one thing to just, you know, share your opinion that you don't like what the president is doing. It's another thing to get violent, to attack ICE agents. And we're seeing, and in New York as well, we're seeing that happen. And so I think Tom Homan wants to send a message that Antifa is not going to dissuade us. Antifa is not going to intimidate us. We're going to come there. We're going to do our job. And in fact, we're going to ramp up efforts. That was also a subject of what he talked to Cho about. Just, you know, none of this is going to slow us down.
When you started these targeted arrests earlier this year, you knew it was always going to be a risk. But did you think it was going to get this bad for your agents?
I said from day one, as soon as he won the presidency, the vilification of ICE and Border Patrol going to start immediately. And the people that are hating on, the people that are protesting, throwing rocks on them, none of them have a backbone to strap a gun to their hip. None of them have the courage to take a criminal alien on. And they're cowards. That's why they wear masks. That's why they throw a stone and run away. You know, they probably live in their mother's basement, got nothing other to do than go hate on ICE. But bottom line is, we're not going to stop doing this job.
Yeah, Tom Homan's my spirit animal. But again, it's not just about Antifa. And I really need to make sure that every time we talk about this, I'm not just chalking up this violent resistance to, you know, the fancies of some 20-somethings who do live in their parents' basements, who are Nepo babies and just trying to find meaning in their life, and a lot of them mentally unstable, because they're being fueled by some of the most powerful politicians in our state. You know, we played the clips last week from Attorney General Nick Brown, the state's chief law enforcer. You know, he's been calling ICE agents and what's happening under Trump fascism. He was out there calling ICE agents vigilantes, you know, operating at the behest of the president. I mean, crazy stuff. So he says it, and he's supposed to be a mainstream Democrat in our state, the state's chief law enforcer. And so you have these people in very powerful positions who are fueling the unhinged behavior of factions like Antifa. And so it's not just a fringe. It is the collective, really at this point, mainstream Democratic Party that is causing this violent pushback toward lawful immigration enforcement. And is it perfect and is it pretty? No, I'll acknowledge that. I'll be the first one to acknowledge that. There's some aspects of it, like their daily quotas, so to speak, that I think is creating a more messy situation for ICE agents than need to exist. We're going to talk later in the show about, concerns about the agricultural industry and sector and what might need to happen there and what President Trump is mulling. So it's not perfect and it's not pretty, but we wouldn't be in this situation if it weren't for 4 years of open borders under Biden. And you don't see Democrats really looking back and looking in a mirror and saying, man, maybe we shouldn't have allowed that and excused it and covered up for it in the way we did. So speaking of Antifa, I didn't want to leave you guys hanging. On Thursday's show, I said, we got to get out of here because I'm going to go to this court hearing for Jeremy Calvin Lawson, who is the Antifa goon who attacked our friend, independent journalist Cam Higbee. Yeah, so Cam suffered some pretty serious injuries, including a concussion over that. I mean, he was punched so hard in the helmet that there was dents and like a fist mark left in the helmet. And so it took more than a month, but the Seattle Police Department, as you know, we were covering this all in real time. We broke the news here that Jeremy Lawson had been arrested by the Seattle Police Department. And then, the clock starts ticking as soon as that arrest is effected, where prosecutors have to charge within 72 hours or he gets cut loose and there's no bail at all. And so I did go down to court on Thursday for the hearing. It was interesting. I'll talk more about this in a moment, but a judge wouldn't let us videotape his face in court, which is hilarious considering we have pictures of him and we know exactly what he looked like. So here's a little side by side. Looks like an Antifa lunatic, doesn't he? The whole can't film his face in court thing, this is weird. It's happening more and more often where defense attorneys will make this motion in court to say, you're hurting my client's right to, fair trial or whatever it is by showing their face, which I objected on Thursday in court, which the media has the right to do, and basically said there's something called, it gets a little nerdy, but there's something called General Rule 16, which is a rule of Washington courts where there's a presumption that the media has open access to the courts. And if there's some sort of request that the media has to, change how it documents a court hearing, that we get to object and there has to be a good cause to limit our ability to videotape or document suspects. So for whatever reason, the judge said, yeah, you can't. It's usually you can't film their face. But in this case, the judge said we couldn't record him from the mid back down because of his dreads. Because showing his dreads would identify him in some way. So it's just all crazy. But, we know what Jeremy Lawson looks like anyway. So we can still show pictures of him. We just couldn't videotape his face while he was in court. I will say, though, I was happy with the outcome. So on Thursday, the prosecutors were going to go in and ask for $75,000 bail on an assault three. Which is a felony still. So we're talking felony assault here, which it should be, right? And I thought, gosh, we're going to get some cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs judge who is going to let him go without any bail. And I really expected that to be the outcome. But the judge was very clear that based on all of the evidence, based on Jeremy Lawson trying to contact Cam Higbee after the assault, that she felt like he poses a danger to the community.
The court finds there's a likelihood of a future violent act based on the allegations here. I'll also note that as recently as 2020, Mr. Lawson was restrained in a Snohomish County restraining order protecting a separate individual. So I do find a likelihood of a future violent act, and I will set bail the amount of $75,000 cash or bond. Mr. Lawson, I'm ordering that you appear at all future court dates, keep your address updated with the court. Have no criminal law violations, do not possess any firearms or dangerous weapons, and have no contact with Cameron Higbee, either in person or over any social media or any other manner of contacting him.
That's the only thing he said during the whole hearing. Yes, Your Honor. And then he squirmed out like the rat he is. I thought it was interesting, though, his defense attorney. And look, defense attorney's job is to try to get their client off, is to try to get their client home. So, to a certain extent, I don't fault defense attorneys who want to do a good job and make all sorts of crazy arguments. But this one was quite interesting. So the defense attorney, and a lot of them in Seattle are just hyper leftists, actually blamed Cam Higbee for his own assault. Here's that moment.
What we do know from the Superform is that Mr. Higbee is a known agitator and clearly came to this protest dressed for a fight. I mean, Mr. Higbee appeared to this protest in a helmet and a gas mask. Do you think that can lead this court to question this person's intentions and what may have happened prior to my client's alleged involvement in this interaction?
Crazy. So the argument is because Cam Higbee came to this to cover this riot with a gas mask on and a helmet, he was there to fight. And he deserved to be assaulted because that's really triggering. Or maybe he's been threatened with death so many times before and assaulted by Antifa so many times before, he thought, well, I should wear a helmet to protect myself. And we know that police often have to shoot off, you know, canisters of gas or whatever it is. So if I want to continue to do reporting, I got to wear a gas mask, which, by the way, many mainstream journalists have started to do as well, so that they don't get gassed when police gas Antifa. But according to this defense attorney, Cam Higbee came prepared for a fight, and he's a known agitator. He's, you know, he comes there and he's triggering to them because he's a conservative journalist. So because his presence is triggering and agitating, then he deserves to be assaulted. Is that really going to be their defense in all of this? So the initial court appearance happened, but prosecutors hadn't filed charges yet. Luckily, they did before the clock ran out. They filed a charge Friday morning of assault in the third degree, again, felony assault, and they released the certification for probable cause, which is a document that essentially lays out the case and the evidence they have. Speaking of agitator and coming for a fight, one of the things that was included in the certification of probable cause is Jeremy, a post that purports to be from an account associated with Jeremy Calvin Lawson, where he was warning his fellow Antifa goons that Cam Higbee might be present at this riot. And he actually on social media, allegedly, if we're to believe this is his social media account, which I think it probably is, he put out this flyer, far right journalist poses as anti-ICE protester. It says Cameron Cam Higbee has been caught by comrades disguising himself as a black bloc protester in order to obtain insider footage to dox and threaten protesters' lives. No, it's because he knows that if he shows up without his face covered, you guys are going to beat him like you did, Jeremy, like you did. So who's the agitator here? Who's the one showing up ready for a fight? This guy's on social media putting out Cam Higbee's face, basically saying, look out for this guy. So that's in there. And then also we find out. So remember when Jeremy Lawson, he was, his name and photo were out there as a suspect in this assault for a month. And he was out there. We got even heads up from like store clerks in Monroe, Washington, saying, oh, you know, Jeremy Lawson's going around town telling people he didn't do this. And it's a case of mistaken identity. And he was on social media. I didn't do this, blah, blah, blah. When police arrested him, he confessed. He already confessed to this crime. So, gosh, you know, you should probably just plead out at this point. This is from the Seattle Police Report. After acknowledging his Miranda warnings, Lawson told me that he had, in fact, assaulted the victim, but had assaulted him only with his fists. Specifically, Lawson said, quote, I punched Cam Higbee. On the record, I did not use a weapon. When asked about the punch and any injury to his hand, Lawson told me that he knows how to punch as he practiced mixed martial arts before. So he just punches really hard. Lawson said his knuckles were a little sore after the assault. Lawson told me, quote, I really didn't think that a couple of effing bare knuckle shots to the head at a protest after being antagonized all night was going to come down to all of this. Lawson admitted to losing his temper when he struck the victim. So not only does he confess to police that he launched, quote, a couple of effing bare knuckle shots to the head, but that he punched Cam Higbee so hard, his fists hurt after the fact. I imagine because you left indents on the helmet Cam Higbee was wearing. And of course, one of the allegations that rises this to the level of a felony is that Jeremy Lawson was using these gloves that actually have little pieces of metal in them. And so that's why he was able to dent a metal helmet. And the police lay out in this court document the pictures of the gloves, what they look like. And you can kind of see it's like a very raised knuckle on the glove. And so it seems very likely, given the preponderance of evidence, that he did, in fact, use a weapon. And that is gloves filled with little tiny, you know, basically the equivalent of like birdshot, little metal pellets. So anyway, the dude confessed, bro, you're going to jail, hopefully for at least a couple months. People ask me what I think the most likely outcome here is. And let me just also say, yes, I'm focusing a lot on this case because it's bigger than just Cam Higbee. It's bigger than just this one Antifa goon. You know, over 15 years covering far left extremism in Seattle as a mainstream journalist, I've been assaulted numerous times, you know, and including recently a month ago covering an anti-ICE protest down in Tukwila. I have watched many a mainstream journalist, be it a Seattle Times, King 5, my old colleagues at Fox 13, be assaulted by Antifa. And I've watched it be excused and downplayed and ignored. And these people get away with assaults year after year after year. And nothing happens. And now they're starting to see consequences for it. And I think that's important. There have to be consequences in order to disrupt this pattern of far left violent extremism in the state. So it's much bigger than that. And it's much bigger than Washington. The same is true in Portland. The same is true in California. Luckily, we're seeing the feds come in and charge a lot of these asshats federally, which federal prison time hits hard, okay? Federal prison time will hit hard, much harder than spending a few months in the King County jail. So this is a state charge. You know, my guess here is actually that prosecutors are going to amend the charge up to assault in the second degree. They're waiting for some more medical records about Cam Higbee's, the extent of his injuries. So I think they're going to end up prosecuting him on assault two and then offering him a plea on assault three. And I think he will spend a couple months in jail, or he'll get credit for time served if he hasn't made the $75,000 bail. Because I checked yesterday and he was still in the King County jail, so he hadn't been able to cough up $7,500 cash to be able to get out. So anyway, if you get access to the internet in jail, Jeremy, I hope you're catching our show as we keep everybody updated. Okay. Really important. I want to talk to you guys about the primary election, the August primary, which is going to be upon us before we know it. You know, I'm not big on political parties, but I have supported Republican candidates in Washington state for one reason. It's a numbers game. And right now, Democrats in our state have such a concentration of power that they are literally able to do whatever they want. And it gets worse and worse by the year. For instance, rent control. You know, they didn't have enough cuckoo Democrats to pass rent control for the last couple years. But now this year, their majority is stronger and they were able to push rent control through. They got pay for striking workers through. They enhanced their reparations program. They passed $9.5 billion in new taxes. So really, Democrats can do whatever their heart desires. And that's a dangerous situation, regardless of the party in power. I don't ever want so much consolidated control that there are no checks on a single political party. I don't think it's healthy when it's Republicans. I don't think clearly it's not healthy when it's Democrats. So we need a few checks and balances. So I want to talk today, really message toward moderate, sane Democrats on down to the right. So if you're anywhere from a moderate Democrat or even, you know, a traditional liberal Democrat, all the way to a Trump supporter, these aren't endorsements, but I want to try to get you on board with a few key races that will absolutely make a difference in the state of Washington. Might mean you have to fill in the circle for a Democrat. But the alternative is that if Republicans don't get engaged in these specific races, that Olympia is going to continue to be cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. It's going to be even worse. So there's a few that are no-brainers, truly. So there are two state Senate races that are the result of their special elections. And they're the result of vacancies. So in one case, a state senator was elected to Congress, Emily Randall. And then there was another case where a state senator, Bill Ramos, unfortunately passed away this past legislative session. And so Democrats installed, you know, a temporary person to fill that vacancy. But then they have to, of course, run for the seat officially. So that's what's happening right now. And these truly are, these are no-brainers, even for a moderate Democrat. Because what this would do, if we can get these two Republicans in these two races to win those seats, is it makes it so they don't have enough leftists in the state Senate to push through some of the policies like they pushed through this year. So very, very important. So if you live in the 5th Legislative District, which is like east of Seattle, down like South King County, some of South King County. So the race there is between Victoria Hunt, who is a Democrat, and Chad Magendanz, who is a Republican. And Victoria Hunt is the one who was installed by Democrats, and she's a leftist. She's going to do exactly what the progressives want her to do. She did it this past legislative session. And, you know, Chad is the obvious choice here. And Chad is a fairly moderate Republican. I know business interests have tried to invest some money in this race because they're very worried about even more increased taxes this coming year. And so if you are, again, look, I get it. Some people, it's really hard for them to vote for a Republican under Donald Trump. You got to suck it up, though, because look how bad things have gotten in Washington state. So we really need Chad to win this seat. So Chad Magandans in the 5th legislative district for state Senate, not Victoria Hunt. So let's get that done. The other one that's very obvious to me, state Senate, 26th district. We had the Republican running, Michelle Caldier. This is out in the Bremerton area. Michelle Caldier all day long. And you know what? If you're a Democrat and you're on the fence, I mean, Michelle Caldier, she hasn't been beloved by the Trump wing of the party. She's been deemed too moderate, a rhino. So if that helps you fill the circle for Michelle, by all means. But she's also just an awesome person. She cares a lot about an issue we're going to discuss on the show, which is fixing the state's broken Department of Children, Youth, and Families, saving infants from drug overdoses, et cetera. She's been strong, strong, strong on public safety, strong on parental rights, anti-new taxes, trying to get a hold of this runaway budget. So Michelle Caldier is a no-brainer, even if you're a moderate Democrat. She is running against Deb Krishnadanson, who is the Democrat who was installed. I'm sure Deb's a lovely woman, but I'm sorry, Deb, this is a math issue. You gotta go. So State Representative Michelle Caldier running for state Senate in the 26th district. Okay, this is where we've got some D-on-D races where I just need a lot of you to suck it up. Okay, and again, these aren't endorsements. I'm going to tell you who I would suggest you vote for. Are these individuals going to ultimately take some votes that I'm going to disagree with? Yes. Have they already taken votes in the past that I disagree with? Yes. But we're talking, again, I'll go back to, this is Democrat versus cuckoo for Cocoa Puff leftists in these next three races, okay? So if you're a Republican and you see a D on D and you usually skip that, you cannot skip it. You cannot skip it. These races are absolutely critical. And I would rather have a Democrat who's pro-public safety, who's willing to vote against a couple, you know, bad taxes. I'd rather have that than someone who's going to vote lockstep with their party every step of the way. So three races that I want you to be aware of. If you live in the 48th legislative district, the race there is Vandana Slaughter, who is the incumbent, a Democrat, versus Amy Wallen, who's a Democrat who's currently in the state House, but now she's running for state Senate, and she's challenging a fellow Democrat. Amy Wallen isn't perfect, but she's far less crazy, okay? She's sided with Republicans on a couple key issues. She's capable of thinking for herself. She's capable of telling her own party no. And that's what we need, okay? So if you're in the 48th district and you're thinking, D-on-D, nothing here for me, Amy Wallen, okay? Please and thank you. Amy Wallen. Not Vandana Slaughter. Amy Wallen. Am I being too aggressive? Amy Wallen, damn it! Okay, and again, I'm not endorsing her. I'm just saying, better option. State House race in the 33rd legislative district. We talked about this one at length on the show last week. No brainer. Kevin Schilling has got to be the choice here. Edwin Obross was the puppet who Democrats installed temporarily to fill this seat. He introduced some of the craziest pro-crime, pro-criminal policies this past legislative session. He voted for all the new taxes. He voted for rent control, pay for striking workers, you name it. Kevin Schilling is the current mayor of Burien. He's a Democrat, but he is sane. He's pushed very hard for public safety to clean up the homeless encampments. I know that he'll go down to Olympia and he'll be able to tell off his own party. And I think it's likely he'll cross the aisle for a few votes. That's really all we can hope for, people. Will I agree with him on everything? No. Not an endorsement, although I do like Kevin quite a bit. I think he's a cool guy. So State House, 33rd Legislative District, Burien area. Kevin Schilling. You fill that little circle in. Fill that circle in. Kevin Schilling, not Edwin Obross. Big no-no. Kevin Schilling, 33rd District, State House. All right, one more, and this one, it kills me right here. It's hard for me to tell you to vote for Claudia Balducci for King County Executive. Both of them, frankly, are a little bit cuckoo. I don't trust either of them, I'll be honest. But remember, in the King County executive race, the only Republican in the race ended up pulling out of the race because he's been, like, allegedly stalking his ex, and now he's tied up in all these court efforts. So, you know, he's not an option anymore. So there are two Democrats in this race now. Girmay Zahalai, who's a socialist, let's be honest. He can call himself whatever he wants. He's a socialist. And then Claudia Balducci. Both of them are on the King County Council. I don't like either of them politically. You know, Girmay, I've talked to him. He's been on the show before. I think he's a nice guy. But his politics are dog crap. So we're not doing that. So Claudia can win if Republicans swallow their pride and just vote for her. She'll get some of the moderate Democrats, some of the not pro-police defunding Democrats, some of the more business-friendly Democrats. And then if Republicans will really come out hard for her, I think that she can win this race. Again, not a fan. Not a fan at all. This is the hardest one for me to tell you. Vote for Claudia Balducci. But the alternative is someone who, again, supported the idea of reforming, quote unquote, police, basically dismantling the existing constructs of policing. He was always very careful with his words, but let's be honest, he was in support of police defunding. And he really, I think, has a lot of tendencies, as much as he tries to present himself reasonably, of going far, far socialist. Again, I don't trust Claudia. I think she also is open to peer pressure quite a bit, but it's the only option here. So you got to suck it up. You got to vote for Claudia Balducci. Not an endorsement, but it's the best that we can do, because the other guy apparently can't stop texting his ex. It's like, you really, John Wilson, you really did us dirty like that. Oh, yes, stalking, allegedly, facing criminal charges. Yes, it's weird.
The houseboat story.
I don't know if I heard the extent of it, but you're talking about, it's weird. So he's in the race. We had a Republican, and then all this stuff came up, and we don't got one anymore. Not that he would have had a chance of winning anyway.
There is, I have seen pictures of his ex with Bruce Harrell and a lot of Democrats.
Oh, come on.
So there is a there is ample evidence
that I've seen.
Agreed.
That where she was like messaging him, leave me alone, and he goes, never, in all caps. Like,
oh, no.
This is some Dateline Secrets Uncovered
stuff. All of it
stuff.
Is very bizarre.
Yeah. So he's not an option anymore.
Not an option.
Which is why I have to sit here and say, vote for Claudia Balducci. Give me a break. What a depressing day for me. But again, incremental change. Incremental change. Anyway, okay. Coming up next, we're going to keep tracking this Pierce County executive story about Ryan Mello. We broke the news last week that he essentially tried to use his platform as the Pierce County executive to give preference to certain political candidates at a Pride event. But now, after doing a little digging, it seems like, I would say, I'm 99.9% sure he violated state law. So we're going to get into the exact state law that I think he ran afoul of. First, happening this Thursday, Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having another one of his Know Your Risk live webinars. This one is his halftime webinar. So if your retirement portfolio was a sports team, do you know how well it performed in the first half of 2025? Is your financial advisor making any halftime adjustments? Well, join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his halftime webinar. Again, this Thursday. The halftime webinar will not be a rah-rah speech. It'll be a straight-up X's and O's discussion on global unrest affecting the market, perspective on the outlook for the second half of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in this free halftime webinar. Again, this Thursday, July 24th, still time to sign up, totally free. Register now, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And if you can't make the webinar, at least get a second opinion. It's free. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. I've seen a lot of shady politicians in my career. I've seen a lot of politicians violate ethics laws. But I gotta say, I think 6 months into the job is a record. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Yes, Ryan Mello has been the Pierce County executive for all of 6 months. I warned you about this guy. Should have elected Kelly Chambers, but here we are. And about 6 months in, it appears he violated state law around ethical guidelines for elected officials. So just to catch you guys up, because I'm not letting go, I'm like a dog on a bone of this story. And one of the reasons, by the way, and I think if you don't live locally and you're like, why do I care about this? in states like Washington, and there are other states like this too, where again, you have such a consolidation of Democratic power and they really don't fear electoral consequences. So they play fast and loose with the rules and fast and loose with the laws because they're thinking, who's going to do anything about it? Who's going to say anything about it? I'm not going to lose my seat. I'm not going to lose my job. So they're perfectly fine violating ethics laws because for many, many years, they've been able to do that and then still gotten reelected, still gotten promotions. And so we've got to stop that. We have to stop this feeling amongst the party in power that they can get away with anything. And so we're going to be a dog on a bone on this. So background, there was a, on July 12th, there was a pride event in Tacoma, Tacoma Pride. And it is run by a private entity. However, the government in Pierce County decided to get involved in it. Not only did they decide to sponsor it with your taxpayer money to the tune of $15,000, but Pierce County Executive Ryan Mello sent out an email to some other staffers and to all politicians, political candidates, including judges in the Pierce County area. And he basically said, hey, come and join us at Tacoma Pride. We'd love to have you. But if you want to be introduced on stage, you have to sign a pledge that you support our policy positions on LGBTQ issues, including gender mutilation for kids and abortion. So literally, he, using his official county email, sent out this invite contingent on signing a pledge, both judicial candidates and other political candidates. You can all come, everyone's welcome, but you have to sign the pledge. And the pledge is crazy. I mean, there's some things on there like, hey, you know, you can't discriminate in the workplace, at school, or in personal lives, which is like, okay, no one should be discriminating anyway. But then it gets into, this includes steadfast commitment to defending marriage equality, protecting the rights of trans youth and families to seek gender-affirming care, and all other current protections under law in recognition of the intersectionality of reproductive justice rights and the LGBTQ plus community. We also support and affirm the right for any person to exercise autonomy over their body and make the reproductive healthcare choices that best support their health and well-being. So it's very clear what this did. This, while the invite is extended to all political candidates, the only ones who can be introduced on stage as allies or members of the LGBTQ community at this massive platform with tens of thousands of people there are the individuals and the political candidates and judges who are willing to sign this pledge. Who does that mostly rule out? Republicans, right? I don't know of one Republican who'd be willing to sign that pledge. They might support marriage equality, which is a pretty mainstream position at this point, but do they support gender-affirming care for kids? Not a chance in hell. There are even some moderate Democrats, although they might not say it publicly, who don't support gender mutilation of children. So you cannot, as an elected official, use government resources to support political candidates and campaigns. You cannot do it. The state law on this is very clear. And it's very clear that that's what Ryan Mello was doing here. So we had some folks helping us with background research on this, but RCW 42.17A.555 lays this out. And again, I said 99.9%, I'm 100% sure. Ryan Mello violated state law when he did what he did. It says, no elected official, nor any employee of his or her office, nor any person appointed to or employed by any public office or agency may use or authorize the use of any of the facilities of a public office or agency, directly or indirectly, for the purpose of assisting a campaign for election of any person to any office or for the promotion or opposition to any ballot proposition. So it's very clear here. It says facilities of a public office or agency include but are not limited to use of stationery, postage, machines, equipment, use of employees of the office or agency during working hours, vehicles, office space, blah, anything. So he used his email, used his office space, he used his employees to benefit political campaigns of candidates of his choosing. So 100%, no doubt in my mind, Pierce County Executive Ryan Mello, 6 months on the job, has violated state law. The question is, what happens from here? This would be grounds for a recall if the citizens of Pierce County so chose. Certainly, it's an ethical violation. I think also PDC violation, but that would be the very bottom. I know there are some individuals, specifically candidates, who weren't willing to sign the pledge, who might be interested in pursuing any one of those avenues. And then there's the question, of course, of is it just Ryan Mello or are there other people who are implicated in this? Remember Ryan Mello's email where he said, you're invited, but you have to sign one of these pledges. It included Lori Jenkins, the Speaker of the House, on it. It also included employees of Pierce County named Evan Kopfler, Maxine Latterill, and a legislative staffer. Do you have this email, Nicole? A legislative staffer named Gretchen Malzkowski. But it came from Ryan Mello. So the question is, did any of those other individuals on the email participate any further in this violation of state law? Did Lori Jenkins participate any further? Did these three staffers participate any further? If they did, and we're going to find that out because we're doing public records requests, they too violated state law, specifically RCW 42.52.180, use of public resources for political campaigns. It says no state officer or state employee may use or authorize the use of facilities of an agency directly or indirectly for the purpose of assisting a campaign for election of a person to an office or for the promotion of or opposition to a ballot proposition. So just receiving an email from Ryan Mello isn't enough to implicate them, because anybody can send an email to anybody. It's not their fault. They got the email, right? It's not their fault. Ryan Mello wants to violate state law 6 months into the job. But what did they do with the email from there? Did they engage in any way in collecting the names of these people who were willing to sign it? Did they help to plan for the Tacoma Pride event and for the candidates who would be introduced on stage? Did the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, assign tasks to any legislative staffers? Because then that would make her complicit as well in violating state law. So we are doing public records requests as we speak. We're going to get to the bottom of this. I'm not a resident of Pierce County, so I have no standing to be able, nor is it really appropriate for me to be the one that would file any sort of grievance against the Pierce County executive, but I'm 100% sure he violated state law. And also, as we talked on the show last week, we did a second segment on this as a follow-up, and we did get emails back from the Pierce County executive's office, but you could tell they were dodging our questions. You could tell they knew that he was cooked. You could tell from his spokesperson that she was not interested in putting any sort of acknowledgement or admission in writing. Because not only do you have sort of the ethical side of this that could lead to a recall effort, but you also have potentially a civil avenue here. Because if you're one of these political candidates who could not partake in this activity that was being sanctioned by the government to promote your political opponent, I think you could sue Pierce County. I think you could sue Pierce County, and if Lori Jenkins was complicit, I think you could sue the state of Washington as well. So there's a lot of, what do you call it? A lot of balls up in the air. Is that it? A lot of balls in the air? Yeah. Sure. I don't know. You know me with my metaphors. A lot of balls in the air. I don't know why I'm making that gesture. A lot of things in the air. And so we're going to keep following these, get our public records requests in, and we will update you guys if anyone chooses to take action against Ryan Mello in the form of a recall or any sort of avenue as well. But not letting go of this one. Okay, coming up next, it just gets more horrifying by the day. The number of children in the state of Washington who are dying or almost dying as a result of exposure to hard drugs in the home is skyrocketing, and it really does not seem that Democrats in charge are eager to do anything about it. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is the guy that you should call if you're thinking about selling your home, even if you're just at the early stages of it, thinking, I hear from people all the time like, I think we might move, I think we might leave the state, things are too far gone. I want you to stay. I really do, but I understand if you don't want to be here anymore. So reach out to Wes Jones and just ask him, like, hey, here's my plan. Here's what I'm thinking. You know, how does the market look right now? What might I be able to get for my home? How long could I expect my home to take to sell? Wes has been doing this for a long time in our area. He'll be able to give you a really good analysis of the state of things. And then he can talk to you about the things that his team at Wes Jones & Associates offers that no one else does, like their listing boost concierge service, where they can come in, manage cosmetic upgrades, so you don't have to do a damn thing, and you don't even have to pay for it until closing. So just taking a ton of stress off your plate. He loves projects like that. And then he can give you a free market analysis, use their home value calculator at sellwithwes.com. Just plug in your address, see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. So check it out, sellwithwes.com. Reach out to our buddy Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. Okay, so we've talked about this a little bit, and it's something that we're continuing to track, and that is the increase in the number of children who are technically supposed to be under the watchful eye of the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families, who are either overdosing in the home or coming close to death because they come into contact with deadly drugs like fentanyl. And it's all because in the state of Washington, Democrats have really pushed this idea that it's okay as a parent or caregiver to be using hard drugs around children. And we don't want to tear families apart, which is a horrifying idea to begin with. But anyone who thinks rationally knows what that will lead to. They knew that it would lead to this. A stark increase in the number of children who are dying. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So the numbers have gotten so bad when it comes to these children under the care of DCYF overdosing on drugs that they've had these like special meetings to try to figure out, okay, you know, what do we do about this? And it's just sad. These meetings go on for hours. And there's nothing meaningful that comes out of them. It's like this should be an absolute state of emergency situation. When you look at the numbers, and they get worse and worse. We talked about the latest numbers a few weeks ago, and now there's even more out that show the direction is heading. It's disgusting. It's horrible. We could have three times more children die this year under the care of DCYF related to drugs than last year. So if you look at the numbers, 2020, the fatality count was 10. And if you go to the first quarter only of 2025, seven already. And that's in the first 3 months of the year. So there were 10, which is already bad enough, in all of 2020, and 18 near fatalities in all of 2020. And we've already almost met that in just the first quarter of 2025. So actually, we're looking at potentially four times more children who will die or nearly die based on exposure to hard drugs in the state of Washington. Because Democrats believe that using a drug like fentanyl around a child is not enough to get that child taken from you. Can you imagine thinking something so crazy? And I'm going to get to the latest numbers in a second. But I get it that there are people who start off in a normal life, leading a normal life, who might come to abuse fentanyl for a variety of reasons. I don't think the only people abusing fentanyl in our state are like the hardcore drug addicts down at Third and Pine in Seattle. I've heard and talked to on this show many people whose foray into, you know, using hard street drugs was an injury. And that's been true. That was what pushed the heroin epidemic and now the fentanyl epidemic. You're leading a normal life. You're a productive member of society. You have an injury. Your drugs, you know, they start to restrict it and you're addicted. And that happened to so many people. So I certainly don't believe that going through a period of substance abuse in your life should preclude you from ever getting your children back. That's ridiculous. But in order to get back on track, while also making sure your child is happy and healthy, and giving you the space you need to not worry about parenting and worry about getting better. This idea that you can do that, that you can get better while caring for a small child that you're putting at risk every single day and that a judge shouldn't take that child away from you is insane. It's insane. So those numbers I just read you, we had those a few weeks ago on the show, and now we have the numbers for the second quarter of 2025. And it's continuing to go in a really bad direction. So now we know in the first 6 months of 2025, this is according to the Center Square, 92 children in Washington were killed or nearly killed. 90, you guys, 92. 92. So again, if you look back at 2020, for the whole year in 2020, 28 died or nearly died for an entire year. Now in the first 6 months of 2025, it's 92. One is too many. 92? So they have this emergency meeting with DCYF, asinine. And Nicole, God bless her heart, was like trying to listen to anything meaningful that Democrats had to say about how we're going to fix this. Let's see. So Patrick Dowdy is the director of OFCO. He told board members that they've updated the numbers from quarter one. So quarter one was even worse than they initially thought, because they had all these cases that were pending, trying to get to the bottom of what happened. So the quarter one numbers that I gave you a minute ago, seven fatalities, 20 near fatalities, Patrick Dowd updated those numbers.
Both of all of critical incidents, fatality, near fatalities that we received, that went up to 47 in that first quarter of 2025.
Yeah, and that's the Department of Children, Youth, and Families Oversight Board that Patrick Dowd is with there. And then he adds to those numbers for quarter two.
Just earlier this week, I looked at our numbers for the second quarter of 2025, and that's not included in this slide, but it showed 45 errors reports regarding child fatalities and near fatalities compared to 47 in the first quarter.
Yeah. So we thought the numbers were bad when we shared them with you like 3 weeks ago, and they went back and they amended them, and now they're even worse than that. And we're sitting here having these four-hour meetings where Democrats don't come away with any meaningful solutions about how they're going to fix this. In fact, there was a clip, I don't think we pulled it, right, with Claire Wilson, Senator Claire Wilson, total lefty, and she's having this, oh, but this could include children who overdosed because they were exposed to, like, medical-grade fentanyl, right? As if that would make it any better. I don't care if it's a child who overdoses and they're supposed to be under the watchful eye of DCYF and they ingest a fentanyl pill that a doctor prescribed versus some fentanyl that their parent got off the street. The result is the same. It's essentially the same thing. And they're already under the watchful eye of DCYF for a reason. Because there's a concern, right, with the ability of the parent to parent. But in the state, because of the Keeping Families Together Act, we've decided that that's in and of itself is not enough to take the child out of the home. And remember, the only sort of solution that DCYF presented was, oh, we'll give parents free lock boxes to be able to lock up their drugs so that, when they're totally zonked out, overdosing, you know, the drugs are locked up in a lockbox. As if anyone who's just ingested fentanyl, be it through a needle or through a pill, is going to have the presence of mind to stop, gather everything up, and lock it in a lockbox before they pass out, leaving their child to just fend for themselves. And there were efforts. I mean, this trajectory has been obvious. The trajectory has been obvious ever since the Keeping Families Together Act was passed. And there were a couple Democrats who were with Republicans this past session saying, hey, hello, do you see what's happening here? Children are dying. Can we fix that this session? Can we make it so that judges have more authority to remove these kids from the home temporarily? Can we make that this session? No, Democrats are like, we got other things to do. We got rent control. We got to get pay for our striking union workers because, you know, they fund our political campaigns. We got to, you know, improve reparations programs for people of color. We got to pass all these new taxes. The kids can keep dying. We'll maybe talk about it next year, maybe. But they're not going to unless the public is outraged, as every member of the public should be. It should not be a political issue. Since when is children dying a political issue? Since when is babies dying a political issue? It's insane, this place that we've come to, but they genuinely want to prioritize drug abusers above all else. Like, oh, drug abuse isn't a crime. Like, it's okay, they're there. And when we literally had the chair of the Public Safety Committee in Olympia, Chair Roger Goodman, who was on King 5 News because there were efforts to try to increase the penalties for a parent, the criminal penalties, if their child, you know, overdoses from fentanyl that was theirs. And Roger Goodman, honest to God, sat across from this King 5 reporter and said, well, you know, we don't want to criminalize a parent who might not have known. They might not have had the presence of mind to know the consequences of their actions. So they just, what, get a one get out of jail free card for a child dying? It's crazy stuff, you guys. And at the same time this is happening, we've got the governor of the state of Washington who's defunding a pediatric care facility that takes care of drug addicted babies. It's almost as if they want these babies to die. What other conclusion am I supposed to come to other than they want these babies to die? Because you're looking the other way, even when the numbers are skyrocketing, and then you're defunding one of the only facilities in the state that specializes in making sure children born drug addicted live. Help me out with that one. Nicole, anything you want to add? I know you had to watch this meeting.
92 children. I'm not sure how many died and how many were close to it, but not one. I searched and not one media outlet locally has picked up on this. That's insane. I mean, only the Center Square is following this. That is so many kids. So many kids.
I don't even know what to say to that.
If there were that many kids in a school that fell off the top of the swing set and broke a leg, you don't think there would be, oh my God, 92 kids broke their legs.
Or let's just go there and say it's school shooting. Let's just go there and say that.
Right.
What is so different about putting a bullet through an innocent child or putting a deadly drug through an innocent child? If the outcome is the same, if they die. But you think if for one second, if we had 92 instances of little kids being shot and dying or almost dying in the first 6 months of the year, that they would be this like, meh, about it? But because it's fentanyl and you guys love drugs and drug abusers and you want to coddle them, it's not an emergency? How is it not literally a state of emergency? Because they created it, right? Because they created the conditions that led to the drug crisis that we're in. They created it through a lack of enforcement, through a 2-year experiment with the decriminalization of hard drugs. Everything they've done has led up to this point in a very obvious way. And anyone with common sense could see it all coming. Yet they chose to do nothing about it because they'd rather appear sympathetic to drug abusers than save the lives of little kids and babies. It's insane. It's insane.
Just breaks
I don't
heart.
Know which we need. And there's been a couple Democrats. You know, we had on State Representative Maury Levitt, who's very passionate about this issue. She's one of the only reasonable Democrats in Olympia who actually said, I'm going to work with Republicans day in, day out to try to fix this. Couldn't get the kind of traction that she wanted because they're so focused on all these other things. Oh, sorry. We got rent control to think about. Right. We got to get a payday to our union employees. We can't think about the dead babies. Sick. Sick.
Very sick.
Sick. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in trying to right the ship here in Washington. All right. We got another great First Mark insurance story. We always get these. We like weekly have people saying, oh my God, Brandy, why did I wait so long to take the First Mark challenge? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. This is from Lisa in Grays Harbor County. She said, Brandy and Nicole, after watching you from day one and hearing about First Mark daily, I finally talked my husband into doing the challenge. They were amazing to work with and very attentive to the issues. Unfortunately, they were not able to help us with our personal insurance. However, when I asked about a business policy, I was transferred to Marie in the commercial department after a couple meetings and a few emails. We had an offer that saved us nearly 50% a year on our rates and gave us more coverage with a policy that met the needs of our business much better. When I told Marie how we heard about them, she said, oh, Brandy is great. I like that we included that. Yes, thank you. Thanks for all your hard work. But that's awesome. And again, sign of an honest company. Hey, we can't help you with your personal insurance. You've got the best rates. But oh, you business? Yeah, let's take a look at your business insurance. And Undivided is insured through First Mark as well. And to save 50% a year as a business, as a small business, is huge. That's thousands of dollars a year. So take the First Mark challenge today. Whether you need personal insurance or business insurance, they can help you out. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. Okay, a couple things again on the immigration front I want to touch on. We had a fantastic interview yesterday on Sundays with subscribers. And we've been talking a lot about, obviously, this immigration issue. And you know, what's too far for the Trump administration? What's not far enough? There seems to be a lot of disagreement on the issue of agricultural workers and how we can make sure that our farmers and ranchers have the help they need so we can fix our broken immigration system. But also, you know, there's even been some talk of amnesty. Do you provide amnesty for illegal laborers who are vital to the system? But, you know, and maybe have been working in the fields for years, haven't committed any new law violations. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen yet. But we had a great interview with Tony Freitag. He's the executive vice president of Crunch Pack. So they pack up like Washington apples in those, you know, they like chop them up where it's like a pack where you don't have to because we're lazy. Slice our apples ourselves and you could take it on the go. And he was just great. He was such a wealth of knowledge. And one of the things we talked about, which is very important, you hear Democrats complaining a lot about the impact of the Trump administration's deportation efforts, they're saying like it's going to ruin farmers. It's going to drive up the price of food if you deport illegal laborers. So there was a couple things that Tony and I talked about that I thought were really interesting. And one's important, and that's that the state policies, if you have Democrats worried about farms all of a sudden, where have they been for the past 5 years as state policies around ag have made it almost impossible for small farms to be profitable? So he said, you know, we really need to make sure we're focused on the fact that, yes, we can talk about immigration, but state policies are hurting us just as much. If you're talking apples, you're kind of limited, right? You can't choose a state necessarily based on politics or business climate. You got to choose to go where the apples will grow, right?
Exactly.
So let's put immigration aside for a second. How is business in Washington?
Are you doing business in Washington, if that's what you're asking?
That is.
Is not easy. It's Washington is probably one of the highest cost of doing business states in the country. We have the second highest minimum wage in the U.S., second only to California. So right away, you're at a disadvantage. Prior to COVID, when we were already paying $14 to $15 an hour, as far as somebody to walk in the door, we have about 500 employees here in the state of Washington. Other states were paying $8, $9. So, Washington is a very expensive state to do business. No two ways about it. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. From transportation costs because of fuel costs, added fuel taxes, everything. And so it definitely impacts farmers. I work a lot we're partnered with growers, and so I'm very familiar with what some of the costs are. And today, the costs over the last 10 years or really the last 5 to 7 years to a grower has gone up exponentially. Labor is up 70%.
Wow.
So, yeah. The price you pay at the grocery store has not gone up at the same rate. Prices have gone up, but really fruits and vegetables have maintained pretty well. And so the toughest part is to be a grower, and because it's harder for them to absorb the costs.
So why aren't Democrats talking about that? Which again, I'm fine. We can talk about it all. If you really care about farmers and ranches and their ability to be successful and not be bought up by these like foreign conglomerates that are going to come in and put people out of work, we should be able to talk about everything that's impacting it. Everything. So yes, let's talk about immigration policies. We absolutely have to fix the nation's broken immigration system. We've had to for a long time under Democrat-controlled Congresses and Republican-controlled Congresses. So let's talk about that. But if you're a Democrat and you're singularly focused on how Donald Trump's efforts to deport illegal aliens is hurting farms, and you're not talking about the through-the-roof minimum wage in a state like Washington, you're not talking about the overtime laws that they passed that limit the ability of farms to be able to have seasonal laborers who work overtime without it becoming totally cost prohibitive for them. So if you're not getting the cost of fuel, the Climate Commitment Act, all these things that have made it nearly impossible, where family farms are closing at record rates before Donald Trump took office a second time, before he embarked on this quote unquote mass deportation, then you're disingenuous. It's totally disingenuous. If you're a Democrat and you want to talk about all of it, fine, I'll listen to you 100%. But if you just want to focus on Orange Man Bad and ignore everything your own party has done to make farmers and ranchers less profitable, less able to pick their crops, then I just don't want to hear it. We see that hypocrisy so much. The other thing I thought was interesting from Tony. So first of all, for him, they're 100% American citizens. They 100% American citizens. They don't have any illegals working for him. And he actually said, and I asked him this, like, if you trust Democrats or if you believe the media and MSNBC and CNN, like Donald Trump is going to obliterate the farming industry and agriculture by deporting illegals. And Tony said, you know, my experience is there really isn't that much of an illegal alien workforce in the fields. Are you using any illegal labor, sir?
Are you asking
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
No. Okay. I think our HR department works very, very hard in ferreting out. Let's say this way, we turn away a number of people whose documents are not up to par.
Okay.
That's the best way to put it. So we work very hard at that. Just because the last thing we want to do is to lose a bunch of people. Our work is, I mean, we have robots. We're a very technical business. So the cost of hiring or losing people is much, much too high to gamble with that. I think people on the Orchard side, you know, Washington, first off, is very big with the H-2A program.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's extremely cumbersome. It's I spend three or four or five times a year, I'm back in Washington, D.C., working with our congressional members, Congressman Newhouse, Congresswoman Schreier, our senators, and I also, you know, meet with other. I was just, in fact, writing a letter right before we hopped on to Congressman Jimmy Panetta down in California. He used to represent the Salinas district, where we co-pack in a facility in Gonzales, California, and he's a big proponent of agriculture. He understands the business, and so I work a lot with government on trying to get a sensible immigration policy somehow.
Yeah.
However, you know, whether it's H-2A, the people that the growers that do use H-2A are hampered because it's so extremely cumbersome. And for you may understand it, but you know, H-2A basically is a contract with workers. You pay their way up. You pay for their housing. You pay their way home. You pay them a wage that is considerably higher than even our minimum wage here. So so it's part of doing business. We don't qualify for H-2A. You have to be a direct farming operation, but we, because of our closeness and our partnering with growers, we certainly understand it. But today, I just heard today that with the size of the crop for this fall, there won't be enough people.
Yeah.
Or I should say there won't be enough people to go through the orchards enough time to make sure they get the right fruit.
Yeah, and he said illegal labor isn't really the issue here, at least not in Washington. He said, you know, you might have a couple small operations here and there that do, you know, look the other way and have people working the fields illegally. But he said, you know, his experience is people don't want to risk it. The issue is the programs being so dysfunctional that are bringing them labor from other countries that can be here working legally in the fields. And so it's such an easy fix. Like, let's speed that up. You know, illegal labor shouldn't be part of the, it shouldn't have to be part of the equation. And for Democrats to spin this yarn that, hey, if you deport the illegals, like our farms and ranches will go out of business, it's a gross mischaracterization. It's an over-exaggeration. And it also ignores all the things Democrats are doing currently that's putting farms and ranches out of business. So it's all just insane. You can watch that full interview with Tony on by becoming a subscriber. Go sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. It was a really good insight into what's happening in the agricultural industry right now. Okay, really quickly, I want to talk about this. I think this is fascinating. I don't know 100% that I agree with it because I have some thoughts about it. But Fox Business, how the big, beautiful bill gives American babies a financial head start for their future. Trump's given babies money. They can't access it till they're 18, but he's given babies money. So it says the One Big Beautiful Act, recently signed into law by President Donald Trump, allows millions of babies born in the U.S. to receive a $1,000 Trump account. Children, you know, triggering that's going to be for some new parents. I don't want it to be called a Trump account.
I love it. I'd rather not have the... He'll be dead and gone, and they'll be like, accessing their Trump account.
Oh, my gosh.
Be like, Mom, how cool was Trump back in the day?
Oh, my gosh. His children born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028 are eligible for a one-time $1,000 payment into their Trump accounts, courtesy of the federal government. Well, courtesy of the taxpayer. Parents and relatives can contribute up to $5,000 each year into the account until the child turns 18 years old. After 2027, the $5,000 number may be adjusted for inflation. The child can access the money, which must be invested in low-cost stock mutual funds or exchange-traded funds like the S&P 500 once they turn 18 years old. So I have a couple thoughts about this. I mean, I do think it's probably a more productive way to, like, I don't know, maybe help kids pay for college, etc. So they're not, if their parents were dependent on, you know, the federal teat, so maybe they can have some independence in life. I don't love the idea of just saying, like, hey, here's a gift from taxpayers. I still do think that's the responsibility of families to save for their children's futures. But I like this idea of, like, one of the hurdles, I think, for starting to save for your child's future is kind of that initial payment, but also just setting up an account. You know, yep. That process of, like, doing it yourself versus, okay, the Trump account is there, got $1,000 in it. Now friends and family have an account they can put money into if they want to do that. So mm-hmm. I think actually it'll be an incentive for more people to save for their child's future that otherwise wouldn't have got that process started. So in that way, I think it's a good thing. I'm very curious what you guys think about this. I do like the fact that it's called a Trump account, because I can so totally see so many angry parents that love the idea and are totally going to cash in on it, but hate that it's called a Trump account. I think it's great. I think it's great. Flawed idea, but great. All right. Our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. I asked you guys, have you cast your ballot for the August primary election? If, of course, you have an August primary where you're at. Yes, no, but you will. Or no, I don't plan to. Nicole?
You know what? It's sitting on my counter, and I researched.
Okay.
So it's ready to go.
So
it's not mailed.
So no, but I will. Okay. All right. Got it. I'm curious where you guys are at. Did I cover the primary election too late? Hold on. Sorry. Should have brought this up. Was busy yapping. Most people, 81% said no, but I will. But that's good then, because we got you these races that you need to pay close attention to. And if you've got a race on your ballot, you're just not sure about it. I can certainly do my best to get to other ones on the show this week in the lead up to the August primary. Cynthia said, nothing to vote on in our county, so no ballot. Hey, that's fine. All right, you have an excuse, Cynthia. That is the only excuse for not voting, is that there's nothing to vote on. Lewis Peebles, it's amazing how many times I write in my name when the ballot arrives. All right. Okay. That's okay. The only time I support this is when it's an uncontested race, when there's only one name, and if the person's so bad or you don't support them, it's not going to make a difference anyway, so go ahead, Lewis Peebles, and write your name in. Bill Swick, I haven't received the voter's pamphlet yet. We have both our ballots, but no pamphlet. That's interesting. And you can go to your county elections website and search for it online if you really need it to be able to fill it out. A couple people saying they haven't received their ballot yet. You should have it pretty quick here if you don't have it already. E says, I just got it today and have not had a chance to look closely at it yet. I will vote after I do my research on these people. Not happy with the candidates I have seen on the ballot so far. No for Harrell, that's for sure. E's in Seattle, so you've got some interesting one. But you know what? This is another example of that, E. Harrell's doing a terrible job. But the chick running against him is also cuckoo.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I hate to say it, but Harrell's got to be the vote, right? God, that really does hurt to say. But he's kind of got to be the guy, because the other thing is not an option. Not a thing, the other woman. I shouldn't like say her name. Yeah, that's a tough one. Seattle, if you're a Seattle voter, that is rough. Rough. R says, very little on my ballot this go around, but I'll do it the soonest I can. That's fine. It's an off-year election. But again, I mean, some of these state races that are kind of a special type election, I mean, it's during a regular election, but that wouldn't have existed if not for a vacancy. These could change a lot in Olympia. For instance, if we had these two Republicans win the Senate, if they had been in place a year ago, we wouldn't have rent control, we wouldn't have pay for striking workers, we wouldn't have had some of these really crazy policies pushed through. So even just two Senate seats makes a hell of a lot of a difference. Sandy says, I only answered no and don't plan to because I recently moved out of state. Even though I've not sold my place yet, I don't think it would be right for me to vote because I wouldn't be living there for the outcome. Because that's because you're an honest person, Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone's as honest as you. I do think that if you're says I'm recently, if you've moved out of state, then don't vote. If you're in the process of moving out of state, but you're still living here, hell yeah, vote. Leave us all better off as you wave goodbye. Tammy T, yes, glad you covered this today. I did good. Okay, so Tammy had already voted, but sounds like that you voted for the sane people, which is great. Hunter says, haven't received a ballot in Snohomish County. Todd says, once I receive my ballot, I will vote. Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, if you don't have it by today, I would definitely be like, hey, where's that thing? So, okay, good, good. Everyone's doing their due diligence. And the only people who aren't voting, it sounds like, are the people who don't have anything to vote for. So you are all officially excused. All right, let's get to comments. Miranda is off today, so she is not in the chat. If you're wondering where she was.
So if comments suck, sorry, it's my fault.
Nicole's fault.
I had a lot to do today.
She had a lot going on. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. What amazing choices for Seattle Mayor Harold and Wilson in a statistical tie for the race. It's hard not to believe that Seattle residents deserve what they vote for. Unfortunately, it affects us all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like me trying to give you a suggestion in the King County executive race. I mean, the mayor's race, Bruce has been such a disappointment. Such an utter disappointment. But compared to Wilson, there's no contest there, unfortunately. And it's this idea of, do you go with the person who is further to the left, but at least is what they say they are, right? Where that there's a reliability there. We're like, they're going to push socialist policies. Or do you go for someone like Bruce Harrell, who says he's something that he's not, who says he's this moderate pro-public safety, and then turns around and does the opposite and kowtows to the loudest voices in the room. And said he'd fix homelessness and
Well, at least you can call him out on that.
I know, but it's just rough. I mean, he has increased the removal of homeless encampments, but the number of homeless is still high because he doesn't go back. There's no follow through. Nobody is like, you can't just sweep them away. And I've never suggested just sweep them away. You have to have some follow through and accountability. And it's just wild. Like the failure of Bruce Harrell is I knew he wasn't going to be great. He's not my choice, but I thought he'd be better than he was. What a disappointment.
It really is.
Bruce.
The sneaky, like, that's what's bothering me the most is the weird press conferences and the sleaziness and the not willing to comment on, what's his name? You know, socialist.
Oh, Sean Scott.
Sean. And just that kind of stuff.
He's a total sleazeball.
Really sleaziness. Like, I used to think he was, like, at least a stand-up guy. So he's, like, a dad. And he's, like, you know, okay, well, at least he's a good guy that, like, has a family. And you think, like, he's looking out for his family at least. But now I'm, like, oh, he's become kind of sleazy and weird. So
Yeah, it's
that's,
wild.
That's the disappointing part to me.
Papa Woody, $5 super chat, talking about Cam Higby's attack and the defense attorney blaming Cam for his own assault. That's like saying she wore a skirt, so she wanted to be sexually assaulted. Insanity. Yeah, it's ridiculous. She asked for it. Apparently he asked for it because the thing he wore that probably saved his life, like obviously he needed to wear a helmet, clearly. Greg, as a foster parent, I can say there are a few good apples within DCYF, but it is also probably the most mismanaged agency in the state. Breaks my heart. The kids deserve so much better. My wife and I wish we could do more. Well, thank you for being a foster parent, because that is a very difficult job. And so I just, for any family that's willing to do that, it's awesome. My tip of the cap to you. Harold Duncan, future Governor Brandy Cruz, you're going to have to run for it. Who else is there? You know, it's a good question.
That's a very good question.
There is no one else. Suda says the majority of homeowners, the taxpaying citizens of Seattle, do not back Seattle being a sanctuary city. Millions and millions of dollars for homeless and addiction. Where does it go? I just disagree with that. The majority of homeowners, the taxpaying citizens of Seattle, do not back Seattle being a sanctuary city. I've seen no evidence that they don't. Like, have you seen any poll? I haven't seen any polling that suggests that like homeowners in Seattle don't support the sanctuary policies. They certainly don't vote that way. They vote for this stuff. They vote for sanctuary policies. You know, there's a few sane apples. If there's polling, Suda, that I'm missing, but there's a reason Seattle is as progressive as it is, which is totally regressive. But it's because, you know, especially I would say.
They live in like bubbles. It's just a total bubble. They love bubbles.
You know, some of the worst offenders are the like 50 to 70 year old white homeowners who I guess feel like they owe something to the world to vote in a woke way. I mean, it's just, it's weird. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'd love some sort of blind poll where people could just like never, it would never come back to them. And you could pull them on sanctuary policies and some of this radical gender ideology and whatever it is and see where they land on it. Lynn Blevins, is that of the Blevins family of the Seattle Times? Because if it is, welcome. They are also keeping the parents from hitting rock bottom. How many times have you heard stories about addicted people needing to hit rock bottom to get help? Having your child taken away could be it. Oh, 100%. It's true. Losing Very your child true. Might be rock bottom for you to turn your life around. Rachel. Hi, Rachel. The overtime pay for farm workers that Democrats passed is really screwing workers as predicted. Yeah. And these workers went to Olympia to testify on behalf of this bill. And Democrats are basically like, oh, they don't speak English. They're just confused about it. Do you remember that? And it was basically like, so I'm going to try to explain it the easiest way possible. A lot of these are seasonal jobs. The picking has to happen during a short period of time during the year. So what the farmers traditionally had done is the work days were longer. But you weren't paid overtime after 40 hours a week because you were working during such a short period of the year that that's when you were making the bulk of your money. But Democrats came in and said, no, you have to pay overtime the same way everybody else does. And they said, okay, well, we're just going to have to give them fewer hours because we can't afford that. So they'll just get fewer hours. They're not going to get overtime. So now you have these laborers who come in. They're used to making a bunch of money, working really hard during this short period of time, and now they can't do it. And they're actually making less money because of Democrats. Wild. Let me see. Yeah. Casey, can you imagine how much that $1,000 in the Trump account will be worth in 18 years?
So I really like this program because I'm with you. I'm not just for handing out tax dollars, but I actually think in the long run it will save tax dollars.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good program. I think there should be stipulations on how you spend it. I don't think we just hand it over to give it to them at 18 to spend on, you know, partying at 18. But if you put it towards a down payment on a house, if you put it toward, because then you're,
how do you control that?
If you had a down payment on a house at 18, what we could have right now?
I would have bought my first ever condo in Seattle, and I would have probably made $1 million on it.
I know. We would have done so well. And or if you put it towards college, if you put it towards even a car, so you had the transportation to get to places so you could make money or do whatever. Anyway, all of these things would have been such a... like a life-changing investment, right? Yeah. And I think that if we can, I think that's huge. I think that's a great idea. I actually, my cousin just had twins this morning. Congratulations.
Oh my God, yay!
And I think they qualify. Exciting. And I think that's great. That's great.
I think that is great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're changing my mind on it a little bit. I wish all parents would just be in a position to be able to put $1,000 into account for a kid. Yes. I get it though. So having a kid is expensive. Maybe that's not the time in your life where you have extra money, right? So, all right. Good stuff. Good comments, everyone. Nicole, you did a great job pulling those comments today of Miranda being here. A+.
We miss you, Miranda.
I know. She'll be back tomorrow. Yeah. But then she's going to be gone later this week. She's going back home for her 20th high school reunion.
Oh.
That'd be stressful for
me. It's only 20 for her?
20th high school reunion. Wow. Yes. Very exciting. Good all right. For her. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check.
See if I have it.
Oh, God. What do you mean, see if you have it?
I think I do.
Okay, great. I'll talk really slow.
Okay.
Let's listen to what sort of gem AOC has to offer today.
Okay, where is she?
All right, nope. Now we're just skipping it.
Okay, yeah,
nothing.
That's fine.
It's all right.
I did.
AOC said something stupid on immigration.
She did.
You probably can just make up in your mind what it was. It was insane.
What the heck?
Blah, blah, blah. If you haven't already, we did launch our new merch store. So we've got some old items and some new items. So if you want to check that out, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And so you can click shop, check
out
some of these.
That's a sanity check right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just do that.
100%. We re-upped our old hats, give common sense, make common sense great again. So that's good. That's a good sanity check there.
And you know what? We sold a lot this weekend, so you better hurry up and get them. Because
we didn't stock a lot because I don't got room around here for a bunch of stock to be sitting around. And you know, they're limited edition, right? So all right, so check that out. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We do appreciate every single one of you. If you would like to sign up to support the show, it's how this show is possible. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show and it'll take you right there. And while you're there, you can also do some shopping on the merch store. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.